Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
All right, Jake, a lot of news on this show. We had LA Knight pinning Solo Sikoa with some shenanigans in the main event. But newsworthy-wise, we had Nick Aldis introduced by Triple H as the new SmackDown general manager. Triple H promoted Adam Pearce by cutting his work duties in half, which is how most promotions should go, I would argue. And he got a title to keep doing what he's doing, but he's now officially GM of Raw. We have to change our terminology when we write up our coverage of Raw now from WWE official to Raw general manager. Adam Pearce seemed pleased with that. We had the return of Roman Reigns interacting with John Cena. And a moment of John Cena, I mean, just sort of passing the torch to LA Knight going, I haven't heard a title shot, I'm back here. But I know someone who has, and endorsing LA Knight for a title shot against Roman Reigns. And then a big night for LA Knight interacting and holding his own against Roman Reigns. My first question to you, and Kevin Owens revealed as the other half of the trade, so to speak, the for John Cena negotiating Jey Uso to move into Raw, and we'll get into that too. But my my first topic to throw to you is, how do you think LA Knight did? I mean, this has to be beyond his wildest dreams from a few months ago, that I don't know where he'll be in 4 months, but right now he's in for a top-tier babyface push. How did he handle things tonight, sharing that ring space with Reigns?
I thought he did okay. You know, he doesn't come across to me as, like, and I know a lot of people think of him as like this, you know, this resurgent, you know, sort of attitude era 90s type of character. And I get it, but there is part of me that thought he looked a little out of place doing all the shtick, you know, in the face of Roman Reigns, who's like this very three-dimensional, well-realized character, because they aren't speaking on the same level, so to speak. You know, you can tell that LA Knight is very, you know, he relies on the shtick, the catchphrases, the gimmicks as to get through his promos, and Roman just sort of talks like a human being. And so I'm interested to see how that plays out long term, if they have Roman, you know, just kind of handle it a little gently so that they don't expose too much of that. But it certainly jumped out to me. But in terms of just performance, he didn't like wilt in the face of Roman Reigns, and he certainly got a gigantic crowd reaction. So I think I would call this segment a success.
Yeah. And I mean, I think what matters more than anything, because there's going to be people out there critiquing LA Knight for all kinds of reasons, including, you know, the, like you said, the kind of this perception he's a cosplay, nostalgia, derivative copycat. but LA Knight's been doing his own thing for a while, and frankly, there's been a lot of bombastic, trash-talking wrestlers in a while. Obviously, there's aspects of Austin and Rock. You know, he's stopping a mud hole and against Solo in the corner early in the match. I mean, it's a little bit of, you know, it's not that people are wrong when they say that there is an element of that. There's no question there's an element of truth. They're not like being unfair in pointing that out, but they're also not recognizing how little that matters. the crowds are popping for them, and WWE is smart to ride with it. We have, over the years, pushed for WWE to get behind somebody who the fans chose instead of them. You know, Kofi Kingston, Daniel Bryan. I mean, whatever. There's just instances over the years, over the decades, where it felt like a missed opportunity to just go with someone. And as I said, when people were freaking out over 2 or 3 weeks when LA Knight got hot and he wasn't instantly given a world title match, I'd heard he's going to have a night fall. Everyone needs to be patient. The people who are upset now will be happy a few months later. And I think that's true. They have gone all in with him. And having Cena go, this guy deserves this, and getting a push. And then Knight, you know, talking, being given the lines to go after Reigns and say, you know, the way you're talking or looking at me or whatever it was, you're fitting to be spoken of in past tense. They're not stripping LA Knight of what made him popular at all. They're letting him go all out and do it. And, you know, I mean, his work in the ring is going to potentially be an issue. Not every top guy has been a really good worker. But Knight needs to show that he can do the other intangibles in the spotlight, in that main event spot, and deliver. You know, I mean, there's been big names who were really popular. Sting in the early 90s was super popular. But when he beat Flair and when he was no longer wrestling Ric Flair in main events, it didn't feel the same. You know, Sting as a main eventer at that point, he was still green, and he was better chasing than being the champ. And he was able to have good matches against Ric Flair and a couple other people, but there was a big drop-off after that. That happens sometimes. And so with Knight, you know, there's still more to prove. But I think people should give him a chance to prove it instead of writing him off, because if the fans love him, then it works. I mean, people, oh, anyone could do what he's doing. I mean, when he climbed to that second rope and played to the crowd as his music played at the top of the show, I mean, there's body language and gestures and confidence that a lot of people don't, I mean, that very few people have. I don't, I'll just put it that way. Very few people have that level of confidence, the way he walks, the way he holds himself. It's there's a reason fans are attracted to him. There's something that pro wrestling fans like about this type of character. So I just watched this show, especially the bookended segments starting at the beginning and the end. And I just think this guy's earning his spot right now. It doesn't mean you have to commit to him being the star, for the top centerpiece star for 3 years. But when somebody like this gets these kind of crowd reactions, and there's clearly something there to build on, and he's competent in the ring at the very least, go with it. And tonight was clearly, I mean, the most clear-cut sign, with Reigns standing back in the ring and reacting to him, that they're letting him have some big moments here. Do you think in 4 months he just moves to, you know, third, fourth babyface on the roster and has a, you know, secondary feud and it's fine and this was fun while it lasted? Or do you look at tonight and look at the body of work and look at the lay of the land and think, you know what, maybe they should run with him. Maybe he should win the title. Now, that would obviously disrupt a lot of other possible, other scenarios that a lot of people would likely find better. But what do you do with LA Knight, and where do you think he does ultimately end up?
Well, I don't think they're going to blow up the long-term vision for LA Knight, at least not you know, in its current incarnation. You know, maybe if it really, you know, catches fire long-term and, you know, there's some sustained momentum and his performances, you know, continue to outpace people's expectations, that, yeah, I could absolutely see him being a world champion at some point. I don't think they're going to have him dethrone Roman. I think they have other plans for that, and they made that clear on this show, I thought, you know, in a later segment. And so my feeling on LA Knight is that he's doing exceptionally well, given the, I guess what I see as sort of the limitations of his act. You know, he certainly has some of those issues you spoke about in the ring. You know, like, there was a spot in the main event tonight where I think it was like a lariat that went wrong, where they had to do like a reset in the ring, and kind of get the thing back on track, and they did, and it was fine. But there's typically like one of those every match, and so
yeah. Randy Orton always had a side headlock. Randy Orton always had to get the obligatory chin lock in, mid-ring chin lock. And, LA Knight just has one botched move per match, and that was the knock on him. But go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, and so from a personality perspective, it seems like the kind of gimmick that would have an expiration date on it, like where people are, they're really hot on him right now. And, you know, if it continues to pick up for a few months, I think that's great. I don't know, you know, when that point in the future is going to be, when people just sort of get over the shtick. And I think that's what I would worry about. But while he's hot, man, I they got to run with him. I mean, even if he doesn't beat Roman, they got to keep him right near the top of the card, because I think that's where people feel he belongs right now.
Yeah. I mean, if you knew nothing about pro wrestling and just started watching the last couple of weeks, LA Knight standing opposite of Roman Reigns, you know, 18 inches from his face, as John Cena's, you know, cartoon cheering or cartoon acting in the background, reacting in the background, you just go, okay, this guy's on Roman's level. You know, I mean, there's just not a lot of people who can sit there with that swagger and the gyrations and not blinking, just staring Roman down. That makes up for a botched spot, which, you know, Botchbots don't drive fans away from arenas. You work hard to eliminate them. It's been a knock-on night. Knight had a number of things work against him. You know, his height. They have him out there in lifts or heels, so he's kind of hanging at the same height as John Cena, who's in flat tennis shoes. They that stuff is not by accident. You know, they don't want him to look short. For as much as that matters, it does. You know, it's a cosmetic business and it's a tough guy business. So they're doing little things like that, but the fans are not going to not pay to see LA Knight because there's a botch spot that all the wrestlers groan at, and go, oh, come on. He also backstage, we've talked about it. He's socially not as smooth as others, but I haven't heard from anybody who thinks he's like a bad guy who's intentionally being a jerk. He just isn't smooth at some of the social mores, and that got covered by Miz on television. That's something we talked about, and then, a month later, there Miz is on TV acknowledging it. Things have worked against him. He's not a great worker. He's not super tall, and behind the scenes, he got a bad rep from people who didn't get to know him very well. But this was always there. Anyone who saw his work at Eli Drake, anyone who saw anything that he did prior to NXT, looked at him as a WWE, made-for-WWE product in a lot of ways where, work rate isn't seen as the be-all, end-all only thing. You definitely want to have most of your roster be better than LA Knight in the ring, but I do think he's good enough with all the other strengths to be worth at least this push. And again, I don't know where he's going to be in 3-4 months, but just go with it. When you got something like this and the crowd is behind him, and WWE looks like they're doing a good job and they're cognizant of where his shortcomings are, it'd be nice if he could get a streak going of not missing a spot or getting confused or forgetting where he's supposed to be. But again, I just don't think that unravels everything else that's going well for him. Jake, any follow-up?
No, I think we're mostly in agreement. They got to run while while things are hot, and I guess they'll see where they are in a couple of months. But I would expect them to be, at or near the main event of the next 2 or 3 pay-per-views at the very least.
Yeah, at the very least. I totally agree with that. All right, well, let's pause. Let's formally introduce the show quickly here, and then we'll get to phone calls and emails and hit other topics, including Nick Aldis, Kevin Owens, and more. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, October 13th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, editor and publisher of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. Earlier today, I put up a detailed rundown, a walkthrough of both NXT and AEW's minute-by-minute viewership trends. So if you want to know, this is pertinent because of Tony Khan's tweet, the overall show drew under 1 million, but Undertaker and John Cena both surpassed 1 million viewers during their segments on the show. I talked about the ebb and flow of that, which segments or people popped ratings or popped viewership. So check that out if you want some details on that, if you're into that. That's at pwtorch.com today, and plenty of other cool stuff throughout the week. On our website, we lean towards trying not to just hit the latest trending topic aggregated stories and give you some exclusive commentary, exclusive news, and some historical perspective, and even some fun 10 and 20 years ago flashback articles from our huge archives. So I hope you're checking out our website, pwtorch.com, every day. Also, I'm the host of this show, the Wade Keller Post Show, and also the Wade Keller Podcast. On Wednesday this week, a special midweek flagship, Rich Fan, Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist Rich Fan, joined me. We talked about those ratings at the beginning of the flagship, and then we moved into a long discussion on the controversial incident where Juice Robinson held up Barola Quarters as he told MJF he'd really like what he has for him, and it had Friedman written on it and playing into anti-Semitic taunting that MJF has said as part of his biography. Rich and I discussed why it's something we both think AEW should back away from, as inconvenient as it might seem, and as excited and steadfast as they are in endorsing this as something that, as long as all ends well with MJF standing over Juice, then it's fine. Rich and I broke down why we don't believe. Talked about other things too, like Tony Storm, silent movies, and more. Check that out. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app. And when you see the blue and red logos pop up, the blue logo is our regular podcast. Subscribe to that. You can check out the flagship. And then also, I just put up in our interview classic segment this week, my interview with Austin Aries from 5 years ago this week. And then the red logo show features our post shows, which we do after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision throughout the week. We also throw up some flashback shows if you want to relive or hear what we had to say about shows from 5 years ago. The other voice you've heard on the show so far is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. Jake, welcome back to the Coolest Chair. Good to have you talking SmackDown tonight.
Yeah, glad to be here, Wade. I talk about this stuff a lot less than you do, just based on what you just said, so I'm always glad to make an appearance.
Well, one of the reasons I have a rotation of co-hosts is so we get some fresh perspectives. Obviously, I chime in with my thoughts for sure, but I really gain a lot from getting so many different perspectives from such an array of co-hosts, including people who only, not, and this doesn't apply to you, but some people only get to talk wrestling on a podcast when they're co-hosting the show, and it's their chance to express their point of view. But you do great work with Jason Powell over at ProWrestling.net doing the .net weekly flagship podcast that's exclusive for members. Tell people about your work over at ProWrestling.net.
Yeah, I cover SmackDown on a weekly basis, so I do a transcript of the show and a review that you can find at ProWrestling.net. As you mentioned, I join Jason weekly for the .net weekly audio show, which is a members-only podcast that we do together, and I also join him for the member-exclusive audio reviews of both WWE and AEW pay-per-view. So you can check all that out over at ProWrestling.net.
All right, very good. If you want to join us, if you're live streaming our show, by the way, you can live stream our show at WadeKellerPostShow.com and then just click on the live link to the live stream. Easier way to find us with a direct link for each episode is just go to PWTorch.com and click on the link at the top and bottom of my TV reports during Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision at PWTorch.com. There's a live link along with our phone number and email. So you can call in and listen, click the link to listen, and if you want to contribute to the show, call the phone number and push 1. That phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call push 1, if you want to be part of the conversation tonight, we'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on all the things we just talked about and more. We had a Jade Cargill Charlotte stare down, which on another week might have been our top topic to bring up and more. So yeah, just consider yourself invited to steer the conversation however you want or react to anything that we've had to say so far. The email address, if that works better for you, especially if you don't live stream the show, but you still want to get your thoughts or question in while watching it, and then you can listen back to our post show later, is WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. All right. Let's just start with phone calls here, and we'll go to one of our regulars, Brad from Florida, calling us early in the show here. Brad, good to talk to you. What is at the forefront of your mind, or what do you want to talk about regarding SmackDown today?
Hey, Wade and Jake. Wade, just because you just brought it up, as a Jewish person, I really appreciated your commentary on that MJF segment. I listened to it, and not an AEW watcher, but I did watch the clip of that segment, and I'm not one of these people that gets offended by everything that everyone does and says because, you know, opinions are like a-holes and everyone's got one and people say a lot of stupid stuff and I don't let it get to me. But your analysis was spot on and it was just really insensitive given just given the timing of it, you know, with everything going on in the world and to do it basically the next night. So I did appreciate what you had to say about that and I just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you.
With Smack, yeah.
That's all. I just said thank you. Appreciate the kind words.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say something. Yeah.
No, that was it.
Yeah. But with regards to SmackDown, I thought this was the best episode of the year. I thought this was absolutely phenomenal top to bottom. It's just amazing what a difference bringing Roman back makes, whether it was the Cody stare down, whether it was him coming out at the beginning and the LA Knight segment, which, by the way, was just even the camera work was done beautifully. I don't know if you noticed, like, LA Knight with those glasses, and they were really zooming in on LA Knight's glasses, and you could really see Roman looking back at him through those glasses. It was just so well done, and you know, I don't necessarily love the idea of LA Knight being fed to Roman at Crown Jewel, which to me is one of those pay-per-views that, you know, is, I don't want to say skippable, but I'd rather see it somewhere else maybe even at a Survivor Series or something like that. But, you know, if they are doing it at Crown Jewel, fine. At least LA Knight gets a big moment. But the Cody Roman stare down was, I thought, masterful, especially Cody's expression. I thought the expression on Cody's face of, like, almost a little bit of intimidation, a little bit of, oh, my God, I'm looking at the guy who did this to me. I'm looking at the big bully in the school, but I got to be, you know, stand up and be tough and proud. I just thought it was really well done. And, you know, the way that they utilized Cena, I thought was perfect, utilizing him in a way that, you know, I'm not out here to challenge you, but I know someone who is, and having him be that, you know, kind of that conduit for that feud to start. I just thought what a big difference it makes having Roman back, and even the Triple H segment, you know, introducing Nick Aldis, not maybe the most exciting thing in the world until you see the way that they did it, and the way that they did it with bringing out Dominic and, you know, it was just, I just thought a fantastic episode. But the main thing that I wanted to say is the crowd in Tulsa, Oklahoma was incredible. They were so good. I thought that crowd, like, almost earned themselves like a PLE in the future tonight by the way that they were so into every segment. They were, I mean, that was one of the best U.S. crowds of any event that WWE's had all year. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's a really good crowd. Jake, let me throw it to you. You can respond to anything there that Brad brought up.
Yeah, I think, you know, they really did enhance the announcement of, you know, Nick Aldis as the GM with the way that they framed that entire segment. You know, I guess there's a couple things that I'll point out from what was said, but the first one was that, you know, using Dominic to get the crowd whipped up into a frenzy and have all this set up to immediately be the guy that brings out Owens and sets up Dom's comeuppance, I thought was a very smart way to introduce him. Because if they would have just done a straightforward introduction and had all this walk down to the ring with few people really having context for who he is or what he means, it could have been, you know, a segment that was kind of out there happening to crickets. But they really used everybody well, you know, Triple H especially, guiding the crowd and kind of egging them on by, giving Dom a different microphone and, you know, saying he couldn't believe that the noise was real. He thought they were piping that in from the back. And
Brad, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here.
I just dropped off.
Oh, sorry, guys. What was I talking to myself?
Oh, I was looking into Jake was going on. Sorry about that. Let's go, Jake.
No worries. But, yeah, so anyway, the Aldis segment was improved dramatically by the way that they used the chess pieces around him. And I also appreciated the fact that they split up Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in a way that doesn't require one of them to turn again, which I thought would have been a mess. And I guess the second thing that was brought up, regarding the stare down between Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns is they really got a lot of the pieces done well tonight from a production standpoint. They didn't miss anywhere, and they really captured both of their faces with tight shots extremely well, and so just really great production work all around tonight, I thought.
Yeah, Brad, I'm not disagreeing with your premise of it being – I'm not sure I'm ready to say it's the best show because I'd have to review things. That's a big proclamation, but this was a really good episode. It felt big. One of the downsides of having Roman Reigns take a hiatus and be gone for a while is it makes the title seem a little ludicrous how infrequently it's defended despite how much they celebrate the length of the reign. By the way, I can have the longest streak of anything if I win something and then never show up to defend it. At some point, you know, that should be a bit of a factor in this with how few title defenses and matches he's had this year. But that said, and it also makes the SmackDowns he's not on feel weak, but when he does show up, it does feel like a big special deal, and saving him for the so-called season premiere of SmackDown and sharing time with Triple H and John Cena, who also, you know, made news and were part of significant segments in their own way, made the show feel big. But yeah, dead crowd would have hurt. You know, I mean, it, I don't know if Nick Aldis liked the reception he got. I don't think a lot of people knew who he was among the SmackDown attendees. At least that's how it came across to me. But it doesn't matter. I mean, he's going to be really good in this role, already has been. So, Brad, you brought up a lot of good points. Check, check, check. A lot of good things were done tonight. As far as Sammy and KO, yeah, they don't have to break up now. That's good. We'll cover that in the mailbag coming up. We'll elaborate a little bit more on that because I know we've got an email question on that later. Brad, is there anything else either Jake or I didn't cover that you want us to follow up on or anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, the only thing I want to say is, like, to me, Roman not defending it, it doesn't bother me as much as some other people, only because, like, you know, I grew up, you know, with boxing, really loving boxing, and Mike Tyson used to defend the title, once a year, twice a year, you know, and I know this is a different sport, and it's a different thing, and there's a recovery time and a promotion time. I understand that, but, like, it never bothered me that, like, Tyson would, you know, defend it twice a year because it became such a big event when he did. And I feel kind of similar with Roman. And I think him taking breaks is beneficial because you get a night like tonight where it's like, wow. Like, and in one appearance, they were – and I think he was on screen, you know, maybe 15 minutes total or 14 minutes for the whole 2 hours. But it was they tied so many things together. I mean, they brought up – Jay and Cody winning that championship with Jimmy when they were sitting on the couch, and what a disgrace that is to the family and how that can't be tolerated, which ties in the Cody story. And even when Kevin Owens, was transferred, you know, Roman was like, oh man, Kevin Owens is here again. You know, like everything was just being tied together so beautifully. It was almost like he never left. And then obviously the LA Knight thing being tied in. Like, hey, I don't know if you noticed what I'm doing the last month and a half, 2 months, but while you've been sitting on your couch, but this has been going on. So they just did a masterful job with tying all of the stories in with Roman's story. And I loved that. Yeah. I'll let you guys get to other people, but thanks for taking the call. And again, I thought Tulsa was unbelievable. I hope you have a caller or a live correspondent from there tonight, because that was a great crowd. Again, deserving of a PLE after what I saw tonight. So thank you guys.
Thanks, Brad. Good to hear from you. Jake, I wanted to ask you what you thought of Roman tonight overall. What stood out? You know, we had him interacting with Jimmy in two different backstage segments, addressing Jimmy coming back, and Roman asking Jimmy what you've been doing. He goes, I've been quarterbacking, and they had fun with that. And Roman seemed to like accept it almost so too easily as to leave you wondering, wait a second, you know, so much has been going on. There's so much history between them. Is he as okay with it as it seems? And then in the second segment, he starts mind effing with Jimmy again. And kind of repeating his critique in a way, but saying, you know, if you're quarterback, why aren't you running the plays? And then when Jimmy tried, Roman didn't want him walking in front of him. And the interaction with Roman in those backstage segments, we focused a lot more on what happened in the ring with Cena and LA Knight and all that. But even just seeing Roman sitting in the back and interacting with Jimmy again after all that's happened while he's been gone, it was entertaining. Did it live up to what you were hoping? Can you think of anything that they really needed to address or anything that felt inconsistent with how you would have expected Roman to react based on what's gone on since he's been gone?
I thought, Jimmy was far more in control of himself with Roman being present than he was in previous weeks where, you know, it seemed like, you know, like when Mia Yim slapped him across the face and then, you know, they went on a tear backstage, just, knocking out production people and attacking other talent and everything else. I was surprised they didn't address that in some way. I guess they did in small part with that quarterback conversation and Jimmy trying to justify himself by saying, you know, he's just calling audibles, trying to take care of the family business. But I expect that, you know, Roman is probably far less satisfied with the situation than he's initially letting on in this first appearance, and that, you know, this stuff is going to play out a lot more heavily as we get closer to Survivor Series, and what I expect they'll probably end up being in a War Games match of sorts. And so I think they're holding off on dealing with the heavy you know, bloodline interfamily drama until they get past this LA Knight title shot and move on to the November pay-per-view. But I'm looking forward to, you know, to Roman's appearances. I don't know how many he's going to make. I don't think they advertise him for next week. And so we'll see if he ends up showing up, you know, maybe another one or two times before they get to the Crown Jewel show. But it's definitely a major appearance, major appearance when he does show up. It elevates the show in a big way. And I thought from an acting perspective, Roman just kind of felt like he landed in a very comfortable pair of shoes. Like, it didn't seem like he missed any time at all.
Ken Arnold said, Paul Heyman is amazing even after all these years, from the facial expressions to him letting his hair be gray while Roman is gone and then dyeing it back when Roman returned, to that extra spring in his step when things are going well again. It's safe to say that was intentional that Paul didn't just finally get around to running to CBS to get some hair dye, that it was timed with Roman's return, that all is well. Go ahead.
Was that done on purpose for the PLE? Because last Friday on SmackDown, he had like some hair color in. And then by the time they got to Fastlane, he was like completely white. And then he went back to black for tonight's show. So I wasn't sure if that was just being done for effect for the PLE, that, you know, the Roman not being around was wearing on him and it was driving him to age more rapidly or something.
That's what I think they're doing. I've noticed his hair going gray for weeks. So I was like, oh, okay. He's just decided not to dye his hair anymore. Or it just finally in his late 50s, late 50s, it just finally went gray, whatever it was. But yeah, the fact that it's colored again this week, I mean, the timing does suggest it's meant to say all is well again, you know, all that stress of turning gray now has been undone because the tribal chief is back. Could be a coincidence, but it's a happy coincidence. I doubt it is. That seems like a type of detail work that Heyman would have. And he might have gone gray, and then maybe a couple of people said, yeah, you look better with dark hair. And Heyman's like, yeah, you're right. I'll go back to dyeing it, but I'm going to do it when Roman returns. Like, it could have been something like that too. Might not have been a master plan. But whatever it was, people are noticing, and I think that's a fun little touch. All right, our number is 347-215-8558. Give us a call if you're live streaming our show on Friday night, 347-215-8558. We'll go next to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Wade, it's always good to talk to you, man. I'm glad you're feeling better. Obviously, it's been a week, but I know you've been probably struggling with your voice the last week, so I'm glad you're feeling hopefully you're feeling a lot better tonight. And like I said, I thank you as well, like Brad said, for all the meaningful conversation about what's been going on this week. I definitely appreciate it. And my hearts go out to the people over there in Israel. So it's just been rough there. But, Jake, man, it's always good to talk to you, man. How are you, sir?
Doing well, Sean. Thanks for asking, man. Hope you're doing well, too.
I am. I'm with you. I mean, I think the crowds – well, going with the Brad, I think the crowds have been really good for a while. I mean, I think the crowds have been into pretty much everything. I mean, it's been – I haven't noticed a difference, really. I mean, tonight's crowd was great. I think the show was definitely very good, too. I agree with both of you guys. And I wanted to go back to the LA Knight conversation because I wanted to just go back to what you guys were talking about. Because, I mean, I'm with a lot of what you guys have said. I mean, I think LA Knight's a very good worker. Yeah, I'm with you guys. He's not great. But, I mean, I think he's very good for a WWE style. He's fine to me. Botch here and there, but I think that's fine. And I'm excited for this little push he's getting with Roman. I thought he – was definitely good in the ring with him. I definitely enjoyed that, the back and forth with him, the little bit there was. And I think even when they get past the Saudi show and he's going to lose, and I think he should lose, but I think that he's going to be fine after this. Yeah, he might not, because I don't think ultimately he's a main event guy all the time. Like, I think he could fit in an intercontinental title feud or just around that scene and still be very over and the fans can still be into him. And I think he could still do what he does really well and maybe get a main event here or there. But I think that's where he is. And that's fine for what he's doing right now. I think he's in a really good spot, but leads me to the match, which I thought was other than the botch, I thought it was actually a really good match. He had a few good power moves in it. The only question I had for you guys, I guess, regarding that was, is it, because I guess I'm really asking you because I really don't know how to think about it. Is it okay that Solo lost? I think they've been doing a lot of good stuff with him. I still think he doesn't talk a lot, which is good. His actions speak louder than his words, but is it fine that he – I mean, I know he kind of technically had to leave tonight because it's L.A. Knight. Yeah, so what do you think about that?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that when they protected Solo for a long time and then he started losing, I don't know how many TV matches he's lost, but it feels like a handful. You're like, oh, man, they're not protecting him. But I kind of appreciate that they didn't just go, oh, we're just going to – have him have an undefeated streak, which is sort of, you know, just a cheap way to try to get somebody over. I mean, occasionally it's fine, but it handcuffs you so much when you're booking. And I think it's fine that Solo loses because they're not leaning on him to be a top guy right now. And by the time they get around to him being a top guy, this will be a distant memory. I mean, there's all kinds of people who get jobbed out and then revved up again, and you're not really thinking about the fact that they, not that Solo's being jobbed out, but you know what I mean, who lose TV matches. But as long as you're over and you tell a good story, I just don't think fans are keeping track in that way where it defines somebody down. Some people just need it. You know, people who are really green but have an X factor, Goldberg, Jade Cargill, two examples, it makes sense to do the undefeated streak. But Solo is just a good, solid worker, getting better over time, getting his reps in. They are high on him. They look at him as a potential future PLE main eventer. They hope so. But I think losing, especially with, you know, chaos going on in the ring, isn't a big deal right now because it doesn't define him out of a credible – out of something that they have planned for him that's so high up on the card that these losses will matter. I think we're more than a year away from that. And so when the time comes for that to matter, they'll tell a different story with him. Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, from a practicality standpoint, I don't know who else you have LA Knight defeat in order to gain credibility on his way to facing Roman. You know, who are your other top-level heels on SmackDown that you would be willing to have take a clean loss to LA Knight on television on his way to facing Roman Reigns? And I think Solo is just that guy at this particular moment. And I think, you know, Wade, your points about, you know, him not being counted on to carry main events and being able to absorb some losses before he eventually gets a stronger push down the road all fit in there nicely as well. But there's just like, I mean, go take a look at the SmackDown roster page and you know, point out some heels that you think that LA Knight should be pinning on his way to Crown Jewel. And it's like, ooh, there's not a whole lot there. And so it's like, well, I guess Solo's the guy up on deck. And that's just the way it is at this point.
Yeah. I mean, at some point you can, it's like, yeah, I mean, there's just, at some point, some people are going to have to lose and we can't be hypocrites and say, well, WWE does all these cheap finishes and then also complain when someone loses. And this was sort of a blend of the two. It was a big name losing, but there was some, you know, shenanigans and stuff going on. I mean, I think people can recover from losses if their gimmick isn't they've never lost. So, yeah, my short answer, Sean, is I'm fine with it. I think he'll be fine. What else for us?
Yeah, I think you're right. And let me get to my point a little quicker on this one. Going back to the – I wanted to bring up the – kind of going back to the women because, you know, I wanted to bring up about Nick Aldis. I haven't got to see him wrestle a lot. And so I guess my thing was hopefully in WWE, like he would become a wrestler for a little while. But, I mean, I'm fine with the GM role. I mean, you could tell the talking skills he has and how good he is, how he looks good in the ring just for what he does, for what he did tonight. So I was fine with it. But going back to the women's division, you know, him giving Charlotte which they gave a good reason why Charlotte, you know, should, you know, quote unquote, have another title shot. But I'm just kind of over Charlotte having title shots. And I just feel like her against Io next week, I'm scared that there's going to be a lot of interference. Bailey's going to help her win the title. And it just, you know, talk more about the women's division and what you think they're doing with Charlotte and just, and how Jade, talk about a little bit how Jade just feels like a total star right now. I'm loving what they're doing with Jade so far.
Yeah, I think the moment with Jade and Charlotte sharing the screen while Triple H was in between them was cool. You know, you had Triple H being this, you know, big star and running the company, both on camera and behind the scenes, back in control of creative. It's a big moment. And Charlotte and Jade are, you know, in some ways mirror images of each other in terms of their physical look and athletic pedigree. There's just something about those two. Looking at each other, you're like, oh, yeah, those two need to wrestle. And you got this up-and-comer, and the queen of the division. I was trying to avoid saying that. But, you know, the top established top centerpiece act for a long time, with or without a title. Charlotte carries herself like a star. So that's a marquee match for WWE, and I like the sort of happenstance teaser where they kind of each hold their own. You've dropped that hint, however fast you go to it, and that works. You know, as far as title shots and all that, I mean, it's a small division. There's not a ton of contenders, but really they do it with the men too. You know, I mean, it's not like she give you a top 10 list in a 2 month period, six people get title shots, but there is a smaller depth chart with the women than there is the men. And obviously there's way fewer women's matches than men's in WWE. So repetition is baked in. But I don't feel like Charlotte's just been, you know, pushed so hard that this doesn't feel that this feels like I'm burned out on it yet. Even if it doesn't feel super fresh. Jake, your thoughts on Charlotte getting the title shot and the Jade Charlotte moment?
I mean, I really don't know who else on the SmackDown roster you're going to put in a position to get a title shot with EO at this point. You know, once you get past Charlotte and Bianca and Asuka, you know, there's a pretty sharp drop-off in star power at that point. And so cycling between, you know, the three of them is probably their best bet at this point. I guess I thought the segment was fine. You know, they got through it well, and all this, you know, wanting to make an impact and have it, you know, and have changes be made, and seeing the value in righting the wrong of what happened at the Fastlane main event. I think they're setting the stage for him to be very solidly babyface in terms of his personality as a general manager, and that's a good place to start with that. But there's just very few options unless they're going to be bringing additional talent up from NXT soon, or, you know, if Bianca is going to be coming back from her, you know, her hiatus, you know, in recovery time. They just don't have a lot of people for EO to face unless they're actually going to break up Damage Control and eventually have that feud with her and Bayley.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Sean, is there anything else you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, and I wanted to say I was very glad Bayley actually got a win tonight, because she really did need one. I mean, I think she had lost way too many times to make that feud feel real meaningful. So it was good at least she got some kind of win tonight. But I guess just going back to the Kevin Owens thing and him coming on SmackDown, like, I mean, I guess overall I'm fine with it. I'm just worried that, you know, you bring KO in, which, I mean, he gets away from Sammy, which in that sense is okay, because like you said, they don't have to break up, which is fine. But just, you know, he's already went against Roman so many times, so I just feel like that doesn't feel fresh to me anymore. So, like, what do you guys think he does on SmackDown now for a little while? What kind of stories do you think they'll tell while he's there? And that's what I had, guys. I appreciate it. I thank you for all you do for Torchin. And, Jake, thank you for what you do for .NET. I appreciate you guys taking my call.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, Kevin Owens adds another splash of star power to the show. You know, he's on the babyface side for now, but I think he may have more value as a heel on SmackDown at this point. It seems like they have a glut of babyfaces that don't have challengers. So I guess we'll see what direction they go with him. But I would envision that if they don't put the title on LA Knight, that Kevin Owens might be a decent feud partner for him down the stretch.
Kevin Owens on SmackDown, I'm curious if he, in a, you know, quote, new setting, in as much as, you know, it can be with it's a firm brand split, but with, you know, enough crossover with shared tag champs and guest appearances like we got last week and stuff out of nowhere. But I'm just taking a wait and see attitude. I think there's room for KO to be, as a singles wrestler, really. I mean, they've got to have something in mind, you know, like real specifically in mind for him, for, you know, the first feud or two. And he's so talented on the mic. But, yeah, I don't know that I have a clear, like, top few people that I want to see him work against. And I don't know that I want it to be with the Bloodline. Like, what options are there, Jake, besides just, like, something having to do with, you know, Solo or Jimmy?
I mean, yeah, he's got issues with the Bloodline, obviously. I mean, if you're going to keep him babyface, it's like it's pretty slim pickings. You know, it's like Austin Theory and Grayson Waller and Karrion Kross, and I guess, you know, Lashley and the Street Profits. You know, those are really your heels at this point on SmackDown. And so I guess and maybe, you know, AJ Styles, if they want to do something with him and Styles. I guess I don't really know where Styles falls on the alignment spectrum at this point. So they have some options, but, you know, SmackDown, because it's a 2-hour show, typically ends up with a slimmer roster. And so there's nobody that jumps to mind that's like, oh man, this is be a fantastic feud out of the gate for Kevin Owens that jumps out to me personally. But I you know, there's a number of directions they could go. Maybe they'll get if Styles and Sheamus are back relatively soon, then they'll have a few more options and maybe some flexibility to move Kevin Owens from a character standpoint.
I mentioned the email about this. I'll read it now. Azan from St. Louis says, how do you see Sami Zayn moving forward now that he's alone with Kevin Owens on SmackDown? So on the Sami side of things, how does this work for him? Do you think the heel music playing was a glitch or meant to be foreshadowing or pretending something with him? How will he react to losing KO? Does it feel like they finished what they needed to finish with them before this? Could it be a bad sign for Sami that they're actually going to just kind of move him into, you know, mid-card singles matches for a while, and they think they got out of him what they can? Where do you think how do you think he should be feeling tonight is my question, Jake.
Yeah, disconnected from the bloodline and from Kevin Owens, you know, it's kind of hard to know who Sami Zayn is at this point. You know, he's just kind of been hitting the same notes for, you know, for quite a long time. You know, after he finished up that program with Johnny Knoxville, he basically got introduced to the bloodline, and then, you know, that story largely concluded at WrestleMania, and they've just kind of been working through the remnants of it on Raw with him and Owens ever since. And so I think it's really got to be a case of Sami finding a different identity for himself as a singles wrestler in 2023 and into 2024. I could definitely see him, you know, having an interesting feud with Gunther if they want to go down that road.
Okay, number two from Azan. Hopefully Paul Levesque will avoid falling into the trap of SmackDown versus Raw stuff from a bygone era under Vince McMahon, and he keeps going for new ideas. So, yeah, we have just in time for Survivor Series. Triple H said we're past Fastlane, Survivor Series is around the corner. Now let me introduce separate GMs for each brand, some comments from them about, you know, being rivals. And I mean, it makes more sense if you're going to have separate brands to have separate GMs, but it's not essential unless those two brands or shows are rivals in some form or fashion. Kind of can't, well, I mean, it's tough to have the same authority figure booking things. You know, we saw that around draft time. It felt a little awkward, where it was just a bunch of, you know, parade of guest drafters as opposed to a top executive representing each brand. So this sets it up better from a draft standpoint. And yeah, if they go a SmackDown versus Raw match at Survivor Series, then, you know, which might be why they did this when they did it. I am concerned about that, you know, because I just don't think people are fiercely loyal to SmackDown or Raw. And I think it's kind of ridiculous that people, if this happens again, that people who normally act a certain way and have certain rivals within their brand suddenly set that all aside for the sake of the red Raw colors or blue SmackDown colors. I mean, we've ranted about that for years. I'm with Azan. I don't want to see that get brought back. If it can turn out that all this is a bit more of a heel GM and Adam Pearce a bit more of a babyface GM without being overt about it, you could have Pearce assemble a group of people to represent Raw who are all babyfaces, and all this representing SmackDown, putting together a heel team. And maybe you can, you know, do a one-off where at least the crowd will have a reason to cheer for one team and boo the other, as opposed to just being loyal to one of the shows, which I just don't think a lot of people are. This is not like AEW versus NXT, where it's just, you know, people are so dug in their in big numbers on Tuesday night and who they we're siding with. Jake, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I was never a fan of the SmackDown versus Raw concept in general, you know, for all the reasons that you stated, although I could see them, you know, if they're attempting to like they've been doing for the last several months, you know, really juicing up the NXT show because they're in the midst of these contract negotiations for television. You know, if they want to do Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT again at Survivor Series in some way, shape, or form to get that brand more exposure, I could certainly see that, you know, being a mechanism that they would choose. But at the if it's at the expense of all of the other storylines that are taking, you know, that are happening on screen in the company, it's still a waste of time, in my opinion.
Nick Aldis, talk a little bit about how you feel about him and what you think about his role, what they can do with him as GM of SmackDown.
I think it's good in a general sense to have these shows feel as different as possible. And so having a different personality as the GM of one show versus the other, I'm for at the broadest of terms. I think Aldis himself he carries himself well on the microphone. He looked like he was comfortable. His interactions with the talent were done well. And so I think he has a presence. You know, he's a relatively tall guy. He's got a broad build. He's not going to be easily pushed around. And so it's a different type of GM character. I look forward to seeing how it develops. And I think the overall presentation tonight was good. You know, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I think you might have dropped, so you might not have heard a lot of my commentary. But the way that they framed that segment with Dominic and Kevin Owens and immediately framing all this as a guy who puts heels in their place, I think it worked well, because you could tell when all this was initially introduced, and I think I don't know if he walked from like the announcer's area or the timekeeper area without a whole lot of pageantry. There weren't a lot of people in that building who knew who he was or what he was about, so they had to make an immediate impression with him, and I think they did a decent job of it.
Do you know right off, or what would your guess be of what Nick Aldis' age is?
I mean, I'm guessing he's probably around 40 or 40-ish.
Yeah, that would have been my guess. I just looked it up. He's 36 years old, going on 37 next month. He's like, if he was 46, you'd be like, oh, okay, I can see him just being an executive now. But at 36, he's a lot younger than a lot of people, including LA Knight, who are getting major pushes right now. It does make me wonder if him being SmackDown GM is part of a plan for him to eventually wrestle. And I haven't heard, and maybe there's something out there I missed that he can't for some reason, or he's letting some injuries heal or something like that. But I'm intrigued with the possibility. And granted, if you think LA Knight isn't at main event work rate level, Nick Aldis is a level below that. He's got a lot of those intangibles that LA Knight has, but in terms of athletic grace and all of that, that's not his strength. But he's off the charts good in carrying himself like a champion, or in this case, carrying himself with his accent and his, as you said, his formidable size and presence as an authority figure. But I mean, I'm not ruling out the possibility that this isn't more of a conduit to try to introduce him to the audience in a talking role like they did with Grayson Waller at first, and then more down the line than just a few weeks or a few months even, thinking in the back of their mind, we can do something with him in the ring at some point. I don't know who that would be against and how high up the card it would be, but does that jump out to you as a intriguing possibility, or do you think you've heard or read or just think based on his what WWE will value in him that they won't go that route?
I would never rule it out. You know, it seems like he's physically not in a position where he can't work, at least based on everything that I've heard and read. And so if they can set up a convincing program with talent through, you know, this GM position where, you know, somebody just finally gets under his skin and makes it personal enough that he decides he wants to get in the ring, that could definitely be a road that they could go down. I don't think he would be, you know, in a position to be a consistent main eventer. So I'm thinking maybe, you know, it might be like one-off or occasional, you know, in-ring performances from him that feel like special occasions, more or less.
Yep. Very good. All right. Let's see. Zano says, what do you think about the reports of Randy Orton returning soon? Jake, what have you seen on that, and where do you think he would fit in if he is back soon?
I know that he was spotted at the performance center not that long ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means that he was there for medicals or, you know, what was going on there. You know, I know he had a pretty significant back injury that's been keeping him away from the ring, and those things tend to be temperamental, and you can feel good, and then you can have setbacks and everything else. And so I don't know what the state of Randy Orton is, but if he's getting close to 100% and he's ready to return, I feel like, you know, either show could make really good use of him right now, and I think he'd probably be more useful as a heel, but that'd be difficult to do right away. So it might be something that they have to transition to over time. But it seems like the company is really missing out on major heels on the Raw brand, and I guess he, you know, he could be of use in that respect on SmackDown as well, but it seems like he's less needed there.
Yeah, I can imagine a heel Orton in LA Knight, just that seeming like, okay, another big legacy name for LA Knight to battle. That wouldn't seem like a big drop-off once LA Knight is done with Roman Reigns, but doesn't come away with something along those lines could work. But Randy's one of those people who, no matter what role they have him in, a lot of people cheer him. And so maybe they want him to be in a different role. But, you know, I mean, Randy as a heel could keep Cody occupied for a while to bridge between whatever they do with the tag titles and Cody at WrestleMania. Or he could be there waiting for him to turn heel and go after him after Mania as one of his first opponents if Cody does win the title at WrestleMania next year. So, Randy, if he's physically recovered and in a better place than he has been in a while, and with Matt Riddle out of the picture, you know, he might have another run in him of being a compelling top guy, and there'll be some fresh things for him to do because he's been gone for a while. So, yeah, I mean, I think Randy's talented, and if he's healthy, he's going to be good in the ring, and he can help give her up. As a babyface, he can take on Grayson Waller and, you know, do something kind of fun in the mid card and so Waller has a moment with Randy, or Randy can form a new tag team and with somebody fresh and different that he hasn't teamed with before. So I think there's a lot of options for him, and I don't think there's just one obvious thing for him though. All right, Zach in Texas says, I don't typically write in about SmackDown, but I follow the show tonight, and man, there's some serious head scratching decisions. We have two on-screen authority figures, but why? Well, I addressed that in the last segment. Nobody was clamoring for authority figures. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn were broken up for no good reason. Well, I'd say wait and see, Zach. The decision leaves Cody still on Raw, even though they're still teasing him and Roman. How are they going to set that match up outside of Cody winning the Rumble again? Well, I think you answered your own question, and I think that's fine if that's what they do. He's on HBK in 96, and I hope they don't try to push him that way. They continue to water down Jade Cargill's eventual debut in front of a crowd with these backstage glimpses. Hey, Roman decided to come to work tonight at least. How benevolent of him. So there's Zach. Favors AEW, doesn't watch much WWE, but he did have a critique of the product tonight. I kind of added my asides as I went along. The idea that, you know, they broke up KO and Sammy for no good reason, I think you need a crystal ball to determine that, or I don't think you're being very open-minded, Zach. We got to see what they do. Not every move has to have a storyline that explains it before it happens, and it could turn out there's a good things waiting for both of them, or a real good reason for one of them to be split up at this point. Jake, any thoughts on any of that, including do you think they're watering down Jade by having her appear on NXT and at Fastlane and little cameos crossing paths with Charlotte? Is that watering her down, or do you agree at all with Zach's perspective that there might be a negative aspect about doing it this way?
I think they're just trying to keep the positive publicity going. You know, they made a big blitz of PR when she was signed. They've had the announcers on every brand talking about her as if she's the next big thing. She's appeared at, you know, the Fastlane PLE and the NXT on Tuesday and SmackDown tonight. I'm sure she'll be at Raw on Monday. I think they're just attempting to maximize the impact of the signing that they made, and they're treating her like a huge star. I don't see it as being a negative or watering her down at all. You know, she hasn't made an appearance in an arena yet, and they're being very careful about who she's interacting with. And so I think this is all part of a larger plan to cast her in a light where she just seems like she's a big deal, and they view her as such.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Anything else you want to rebut or back up that Zach brought up?
I mean, I don't know if there's – I mean, I think we've already gone through all of the different reasons to criticize Roman for not appearing as often you know, as he should, or people feel like he should. I do think they could, you know, if they have the flexibility to have him appear, you know, a couple of times a week on, or not week, a couple of times a month on television, that would be more ideal, just because it it really does feel like the show is different when he's there. You know, just his presence adds a level of suspense to a lot of the backstage storytelling that takes place that doesn't exist there otherwise. And so I do think it's helpful, but you know, I understand if they want to make him feel more special, it might be one appearance a month or whatever the case may be. But I'm generally in agreement that, you know, as the world champion, unified world champion, who's been, you know, over 3 years holding on to that title, there probably should be a few more TV appearances and title defenses than what we've been getting from him over the last, you know, 3 or 4 months.
All right. Brad emailed and said, I was wondering if you noticed the clear omission of Friday night and them only calling it SmackDown All Night. John Cena only said, welcome to SmackDown at the show open. And the logos that all said Friday Night SmackDown were all gone, and Michael Cole repeatedly referred to it as SmackDown only. What could be the reason behind this? Do you think they may be preparing to move it to another night and are starting a subtle rebrand? Jake, yeah, I mean, I've heard all kinds of speculation on this. I don't know if they've decided or if they're just leaving themselves open to moving to another night. There's talk of SmackDown moving to Monday night and Raw moving to streaming on Wednesday night or Thursday night. I mean, I think we could see a very different pro wrestling schedule a year from now when everything starts kind of falling into place. And what WWE does is going to open up possibilities of AEW moving, especially if they choose to move Raw and SmackDown off of Monday and Friday. And again, I don't, you know, I mean, there's pros and cons to a bunch of different possibilities. So yeah, just talk about that, the possible shifts. And did that jump out to you, the branding of Friday night being removed tonight?
I guess that I didn't even notice it until it was brought up. And so I know I've heard the same speculation that you have about, you know, them being open to the idea of moving to different nights, and they're very flexible. I think Ari Emanuel made it very clear in their earnings call the other day, you know, that they see being a 52-week-a-year product with a lot of flexibility on what nights of the week they're willing to run as being a huge selling point to their potential broadcast and streaming partners. And so I would not be shocked at all if SmackDown moves off of Friday. Friday is not typically a great night for television anyway, in general, from a primetime rating standpoint. And so would not be surprised to see them move to Thursday or Tuesday or, you know, wherever they might want to go. And if Raw goes to streaming, I mean, it could be any night of the week. Who knows? You know, it'd be completely disconnected from the cable television, you know, the world at that point, and not really dependent on those types of schedules. But I imagine if they do end up on Amazon, you know, it's not going to be on Thursday because that's going to conflict with Thursday Night Football, and so maybe Tuesday or Wednesday would make the most sense there. I think moving away from competing with the NFL during the football season would probably be a smart move at some point.
Yeah, there's so much programming on now. It you can only run so much from tough head-to-head competition, but Fridays is a bad night. Thursday there's football. Monday there's football. So you could imagine WWE just saying, our partners will get the most out of a Tuesday SmackDown and a Wednesday Raw, and then maybe they move NXT to Fridays. And, you know, it's a very different landscape. And then you wonder, well, does Dynamite also move to Friday, go head-to-head with NXT? Tony Khan said he doesn't want to go head-to-head with football, but with football season Monday, Thursday, and Sunday, and with Collision on Saturday, he's out of choices unless he wants to go head-to-head with football or head-to-head with WWE. So buckle up. There's Monday Night Raw has been an institution, but, you know, I mean, I spent some time back in the day when Nitro first started beating Raw, and I talked with Vince McMahon about it, and he told me, and it was quoted in a cover story in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, which you can read back issues of with the VIP membership. And he said, his phrase was, we are not scared to blink first. And that was when he was framing it as big, bad Ted Turner, this big conglomerate coming after a small family business like WWF. And if we need to blink because they're coming at us with predatory practices, which at the time, so ironic now that he's embraced putting main event matches on TV. But back then he was like, we can't compete with them because they're a TV company and we're trying to sell house show tickets and we can't give away all our big matches on TV. So they're outdrawing us because they're willing to give anything away on Nitro. Well, on Raw, we've been trying to be, you know, more careful and stingy, frankly, with giving away big matches. That changed once TV revenues picked up big time. Again, probably something that would have eventually happened, but certainly Nitro accelerated it. So even going back then, not that Vince McMahon has a ton of say-so at this point over that, but, you know, if Vince had romantic ideas about Raw being on Monday, even if he did tell me near the beginning of the Monday Night War when during the stretch of Nitro winning that he was willing to blink first and move, if he was willing to do that then, he probably would vote for it now if he thought it was good for business. And I don't think anybody else in higher up in TKO and Ari Emanuel, for instance, have a big romantic attachment to Raw being on Mondays. I think they're just willing to move it where they'll make the most money. Pretty, I was going to say cold-heartedly, but there's nothing, it's not a big deal to move a wrestling show to a different night of the week. TV shows move nights of the week a lot. Jake, I think it could be a big deal. Could you imagine AEW because of maneuverings? Again, I'm just throwing the scenario out of Raw and SmackDown on Tuesday and Wednesday and NXT on Thursday or Friday. I guess they could put NXT on Saturday and go head-to-head with Collision or something too. But where would that leave Tony Khan? Do you think he's more likely to go against the NFL or more likely to try to put Dynamite against Raw or SmackDown?
Well, I don't think either situation is ideal for him. He'd probably find himself in a very difficult position competing with Raw or SmackDown directly on the same night of television. So maybe you would rather try to compete with football because at least you'll be able to carve out as much of, the wrestling audience as possible. I think the head-to-head with NXT and the upcoming head-to-head with Collision and SmackDown in mid to late November are not going to go his way. And so, as long as AEW remains the colder product that's struggling to get TV ratings and live attendance, I would avoid competing directly with WWE if at all possible.
I'm trying to think if around the time Vince McMahon said he was willing to blink first, if that's when they started referring to Raw as WWF Raw less WWF Monday Night Raw. I know we had the WWF Raw and Raw's War era when they wanted the 2 hours to be branded separately in the ratings.
Was it War Zone for a time too?
That's
think,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Hour?
Yeah. Yeah. The War. Yeah. Raw's. Yeah. What were the phrases? Raw's War and War Zone maybe were the two things that they sort of rebranded. And they moved away from it being Monday Night Raw. And I think that was, at a time when they thought we might need to move this show. We want the emphasis to be on the brand, not the night. So, to answer Brad's question, if they hold up and it's not happenstance or something, or Fox doesn't object, if they think, hey, wait a second, because the Fox app says Monday Night SmackDown right now, then yeah, they're just trying to prep people for thinking of SmackDown as a show that might be on any night of the week and it's not attached to Friday, since it'll be moving to USA Network a year from now. All right. We got some notes from an on-site correspondent who said he might not join us because he might be going out somewhere. But so I'll give a couple notes from what Dane sent, by the way, Dane C. Meechan and Shotzi beat Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. Meechan got the pin on one of them. He can't remember who she pinned. He said it was fairly well attended. But he's not sure how many, and they didn't announce it in the building. After SmackDown went off the air, Imperium took on Dragon Lee, Rey Mysterio, and Sami Zayn. Sami pinned Giovanni Vinci after about 15 minutes. So those are the main notes he sent. Don't know if there's much to add to that, but it's always good to hear some details on what happened off camera. Jake, I'll throw to you for anything else that might be in your notes that you want to bring up from tonight's show that we haven't covered yet.
I think if there's I don't think we talked much about the tag match with with Cody and Jay against Waller and Austin Theory. I think they may need to revise that tag team finisher that Jay and Cody are doing, where it's like the 1D with the Cody Cutter combination, because Cody continues to land on the back of his head trying to time that move correctly. Like on Monday, it looked like he darn near knocked himself out, and he kind of did the same thing here, where he ends up sort of flying through the air in such a way where, you know, his shoulders and his neck and his head hit the ground first. So that stuck out to me as something that could use a bit of revision. But I think other than that, there wasn't anything else on this show that stuck out to me that we haven't really talked about yet. It was overall, you know, a really entertaining episode of SmackDown. I don't have a ton of complaints other than minor quibbles. I think WWE is doing pretty well right now in loading these shows up with star power and making things feel important.
Yeah, what'd you think of how they handled the return of Pretty Deadly?
I wasn't particularly impressed with the match. I don't think the Brawling Brutes and Pretty Deadly have a strong in-ring chemistry together. They just never felt like they got out of second gear. I did like the vignettes leading up to Elton Prince making, you know, his triumphant stand out of his wheelchair moment at the top of the stage that I don't think people in the live arena laughed at nearly as much as I did at home. It didn't seem to get much of a reaction. And then they had like one sort of weird spot that was contrived in the middle of the match where they tried to like do the Elton Strong thing where he kept Kit Wilson from falling off the apron, but there was really no reason that Kit would have started to fall in the first place. And so it was just really awkward and it got no crowd reaction. I'm a fan of Pretty Deadly. I think their brand of comedy can be very funny. I didn't think much of what they did landed particularly hard tonight.
All right, I believe we've got our on-site correspondent from Tulsa calling in after all. So let's jump over to area code 918. Go ahead and confirm your name for us.
Dane.
Hey, Dane, good. Good to talk to you. I just went over your email, and then I saw that you called us up. So good to hear from you. How was the show tonight? Do you have a good time?
Oh, it was pretty good.
Seemed like a fun show to be at.
Yeah, it was pretty good from the crowd reaction I heard.
Yeah, we had a caller earlier say that it was a red hot crowd. It seemed like a red hot crowd on TV, and you guys should get like a premium event based on the crowd response. Did it seem to you like WWE had a product that the fans in attendance and a big crowd tonight liked a lot? And then part two of the question is just kind of list for me who was in that very top tier in terms of crowd responses. There was a lot to choose from tonight because a lot of stars were there and in action, including Cody and Cena and LA Knight and others. So go ahead with that, kind of that two-parter.
What was the first part again?
Just did it feel like there was a buzz in the building and this was a red-hot product that the crowd in general was buzzing about and into?
Yeah, if they do a PLE there, it'd be like a first. But it was like, other than that, I guess they could. I don't know.
So who got the biggest reactions of the night?
Well, I think the top three were, you know, LA Knight, Roman, and Cena. I think Cody was up there, too, and Jay. But yeah. Dom definitely, I think he had the biggest reaction.
Did the crowd know who Nick Aldis was or react to him? It didn't come across to me as if there was much of a reaction when Triple H announced him.
Yeah, I don't think so either. My husband asked me, who's Nick Aldis? And I'm like, I think he was NXT UK, but I was wrong on that.
Yeah, I mean, he's been around for a while, but... he hasn't really necessarily been a prominent on a prominent enough platform that a SmackDown crowd in Tulsa in 2023 would necessarily be reacting a lot to him. Was there a dead part in the show where, like in terms of a talking segment or a match where it was kind of like the crowd took a deep breath and didn't react?
Oh, the Bayley match. We were talking about that on the way back. It just seemed like nobody really cared. Hardly.
Yeah. What do you think of LA Knight? Seeing him in person in the opening segment, talking opposite Roman Reigns, hanging out with Cena, and then match quality wise with Solo, did he hold the crowd interest beyond the ring entrance, or did he seem, now that you've seen him in person, more gimmick and, you know, more sizzle and not enough substance?
On the area I was at, basically behind where the tag team, the good guy tag team, I was back off in that little section right there, and we were big LA Knight fans there, so it seemed like it, at least in that area.
Jake, is there anything you want to ask Dane?
Yeah, I think he may have touched on it earlier, but was there anybody's like reaction that got anywhere close to how much booing was happening for Dom? It seemed like one of the loudest Dominic reactions we've seen in recent memory.
Yeah, it was like, I always thought they were turning down Dom's mic when he was trying to talk, but it didn't really seem like it that tonight. Because, I mean, boos were really, really, really loud.
Yeah, Triple H had that little quip about how, I always thought they were turning up the crowd noise when you're out here. But now I see it's not. I could have done without that. I think that's playing small ball if you're Triple H to, you know, randos on social media, you know, accusing them of that. And whether they did it or not, it's like, one, don't draw attention to it. 99% of your SmackDown audience is never thinking that's happening, and now they're going to think it might happen. So I would not succumb to that if I were Paul Levesque, and certainly Vince McMahon would have yelled at him if he were around to do it. So I'd be on Vince's side on that. But yeah, Dom's heat is pretty special. Do you want to share anything more, Dane, with your thoughts on Dom and the kind of the presence that he had in that building?
Oh, I thought he, you know, did a pretty good job of doing what he's supposed to do. And he just, you know, reacted how we wanted him to.
Triple H, when we talk about biggest pops of the night, you mentioned
several
names of
active
wrestlers. Where does Triple H fall among that in that spectrum?
Oh yeah, he was definitely in the top tier.
Yeah,
it's like we didn't even realize Pierce was in the ring until Triple H got in the ring.
That's funny. Pierce is the type of person you don't notice till he's pointed out. Maybe that's it. Jake, is there anything else you want to bring up?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered everything.
Yeah. Dane, anything else you want to bring up, perhaps even about things that happened in commercial breaks to keep you entertained, or elaborate a little more in your email about what happened before and after SmackDown? Anything else jump out?
Oh, Sami Zayn at the end of it talked to the crowd a little. Saying he was like,
yeah, what do you have to say?
You know, and said he had like a tough, rough week or something like that. I'm not sure why, but. And he said, you know, glad that he was in the ring with a new upcoming star, Dragon Lee, and with the greatest of all time, Rey Mysterio. The greatest luchador, just the greatest of all time.
Wow. Oh, do you think Sammy might have been talking about KO being drafted to SmackDown? It was just storyline, or traded to SmackDown, I should say. Or do you think he was actually referring to something else?
I don't know. I thought something personal happened, but it could have been the KO thing. Huh. But he didn't say it.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Well, cool. Dane, anything else you want to add?
I guess not, but... it was pretty lively crowd, so we had fun.
Yeah, how full was the building? Just was it clear there were empty seats in the upper deck or behind the cam, you know, behind the hard camera, anything, or was it pretty full all the way around?
It was pretty full all the way around, except for where it got to the camera on the upper deck was clear up there, but all around the camera, you know, they just had a few rows blocked off for the camera, but it was filled over there.
Yeah, WrestleTix announced they had over 10,100 sold as of this afternoon and only about 450 tickets available. And it'll be one of the most attended WWE shows in that area. WrestleTix noted that Raw back in 2010 did a 10,000 plus paid number. and Michael Cole was calling it a capacity crowd back then. But so this might have been the biggest crowd. The last time they were there, they drew 6,800 people. So a big boost since Raw in January too.
Yeah, I wonder how many were given away or something, but it was a lot of VIP, right behind facing the camera. There were a lot of VIP right down there on the floor.
Yeah.
It's like, I never saw that
before.
Like,
what kind of VIP? What do you mean by VIP? Like local celebrities?
I don't know. It was people could take the chairs home. I know that much. And there was like a little thing on the chair for people to read or something.
Well, Dane, appreciate you taking time to talk to us tonight.
Okay. All right. Talk to you later.
Take care. Enjoy your weekend. You bet.
All right. You too.
Jake, any closing words from you? Otherwise, we'll sign off.
No, I don't think so. I think we covered everything I wanted to cover.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. On behalf of Jake Barnett, this is Wade Keller signing off for tonight. Oh, wait. We just got a caller. I have never cut it this close before. But let's just see. We got 310 calling up. 310, do you want to try to sneak in a call here before we finish our sign-off? Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Randy from L.A. Can you guys hear me?
You said Randy from L.A.?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, Randy, what's up?
Yeah.
What do you think of SmackDown?
Hey, so first time calling you guys. Love the show. Listen all the time. But was watching the Bayley and Zelina match, and I just heard the correspondent talk about, just the no reaction. And I just kind of got me thinking about how far Bayley's character is just kind of, the wheels have fallen off. And, we talk about it being related to, her character and, the whole damage control and everything else like that. But I want to ask a question about this, but I definitely don't want this to be taken wrong, and I don't want this to be taken as body shaming or anything. But, I mean, if you take a look at her, Bayley's body now compared to, when she first came in, obviously, we're talking about 7-10 years have passed from, NXT Bayley, stuff like that. Do you see her just being slow? I mean, do you see her in the ring just not being able to move around? I was watching tonight and just thinking, man, something just looks a lot different. And obviously her, her body is thicker now, but obviously age does that to all of us, but just kind of wondering your thoughts and obviously some of this is probably character. Some of this is just the team or, the group not doing well. But do you think some of it has to do with the in-ring work as well? And just kind of want to throw that out.
Yeah, so I think it's fair to – I appreciate you prefacing it and saying it's not body shaming. But when you're an athlete and you've got to move around the ring – male, female. I mean, if somebody has gained weight or seems like they're more winded or out of shape or gained too much muscle or lost too much muscle, it's a cosmetic business and it's an athletic business. So I don't think you should have to tiptoe too much, but you want to make sure you're not being more harsh on women than men and how you talk about that. I try to be pretty consistent in calling out both male and female wrestlers as far as if I think, there's something that doesn't fit their ring style that is occurring to them physically. Now, that said, to me, Bayley hasn't had great standout matches. I mean, she just hasn't. But I've just gotten a larger vibe from her. And I have asked around, and people have told me, no, she shows up and seems happy at work. But I've gotten a little bit of a vibe of like, okay, paid my dues, I made my money, had a bad knee injury, which was deflating and really took some momentum away. And she, it could be grueling physically and mentally to come back from something like that. But I am kind of wondering if there's just a little bit of I've gotten the vibe from her. It's sort of like, I'm kind of over it. I'm just going to show up and be a role player. And I can just sort of go through the motions and kind of do my thing. But she looks at it as, maybe not aspiring. And by the way, I don't think there's anything wrong with this. Not aspiring to just, I'm going to do everything to protect my spot and I want to be a top person or I have no self-worth. I just get the sense she's content, Jake, being a character on the mid-card in the women's division, kind of doing her thing. And that hunger isn't there to be more than that. And I think she serves, she's benefiting the shows she's in if the scale that you're judging her on isn't, why doesn't she come across as being at Becky and Charlotte's level? I also think she might be able to rev it up and, you know, there might be a point where she decides or, you know, Paul Levesque decides, hey, we want to really go with you, kind of like they did with Shinsuke. You know, are you at a place where you can really get geared up, get in the best shape you've been in a while? We want to have some top tier matches with you and we're going to lean on you for some promos. And maybe she has another stint in her. Jake, what do you think about Bayley and what Randy had to say about how she is coming across these days?
Yeah, I think it's more character related than anything. I don't have any inside track knowledge on, you know, the state of her motivation or what you know, what she might be thinking about her position in the company or anything along those lines. But just from, you know, watching her on weekly television and observing her matches since, you know, she made that big splash return at SummerSlam, you know, a year and some change ago. It just hasn't seemed like she's ever hit a stride or a comfort level on the microphone. And for the longest time, it seemed like Damage Control was just kind of lost over on Raw. They never got any major wins. They never felt like they dominated the division like they said they were going to. It seemed like maybe moving over to SmackDown was going to offer them a little bit of a fresh start, but it's just kind of been more of the same. And so I don't know if there's really been anything creatively all that stimulating for Bayley, you know, at this stage of her career since she's made her return. I know it's important to her to help lift up, you know, other women on the show, and she's made that clear, you know, in both you know, her in character and out of character interviews that she values, you know, being able to mentor, you know, some of the women that are coming up through NXT and making their impact on the main roster. But I do think, you know, she's not in a position where she couldn't find some motivation or get, you know, some really strong creative output and be a major player again. I don't think her, you know, her physical condition is preventing that. It's really just a matter of opportunity. And I do think her matches have suffered a bit, but they really haven't asked her to do a whole lot recently.
Yeah.
You know, I think when she initially came back and she was, you know, at the top level and feuding with Bianca Belair and having matches with Becky Lynch, things were a bit better. But I just think that, you know, that knee injury and the recovery, it may have slowed her down a little bit, but I wouldn't attribute it to her being, you know, a few pounds heavier than she was a little bit ago. It seems like, you know, maybe she's a bit more hesitant now to take the big risks now that she's had an injury setback that put her out of action for almost a year.
Yeah, I think that's well put, good points. Randy, is there anything else you want to bring up or follow up on?
No. Thank you guys for answering that question. Just, you know, thank you for also, you know, making sure that that question was received, you know, simply from the vantage point of, I just miss Becky before the knee injury. And obviously I have no clue what it's like to tear my knee. So, and then work my way back from that. So thank you. I just felt like that was a really kind of a sensitive thing that I was trying to walk on. But my last question is, right after WrestleMania, I had emailed Greg Park asking where Dom would go, you know, or how we saw Dom outside of a feud with his dad. And I remember at the time Greg Park telling me or answering the question saying he thought everything was going to turn out well and the character was going to go good. And man, seeing Dom tonight standing in the ring all alone without Judgment Day, without Rhea, standing in the ring with Triple H and receiving just a monster kill reaction. I just, honestly, 6 months ago, I couldn't fathom it. I literally thought the heat was going to go away after, you know, dad and mom and sister and everything else. But, man, just watching tonight, watching that character evolve over these past few months, I just think, man, this guy has come a long way. And I'm, you know, really excited about his character. And also, I don't know if somebody, whoever that was in the crowd, will listen to this episode or listen to your show, but did you guys see the sign that said something about I did time with Dom or Dirty Dom or something like that? That just had me cracking up. Oh, man. And then when they switched the mic, when they switched the mics, like, oh, you know, Triple A switched the mics on him. And yeah, I think this mic might not, I just, the whole thing was just classic. And I love that Dom was able to do it without the rest of Judgment Day and without Mommy in the middle of the ring and just him and Triple H. I just, yeah, can't say enough about his character.
I love the new T-shirt, Monday Night Mommy, like that Dom was, I think Dom was wearing that, right? Tonight? It was tonight that I saw that?
Yeah.
It was a logo. Yeah, that's cool. Dom, I've been part of the Dom Appreciation Society for a while. I mean, even back when he was just seeming like a punk son or a dutiful son, but I saw the kind of the punk son in him, little hints of it. But, man, he has surpassed even my expectations. And I think people are, you know, some are slower to come around than others, but, man, I think he's going to be a significant contributor at a high level in WWE for a while. His ring work is coming along. As we see with LA Knight, it's not the be-all, end-all, but I think he has reached a level that shows progress and is already at a point where I just don't think he's, you know, jumping out as super green. Jake, talk about Dominic a little bit and the journey you've been on with him and what you think, where you think he might be 2-3 years from now in terms of a valuable player on this roster.
Yeah, I think really it seems like he always had a really strong understanding of, you know, of what he was attempting to do. And I think the heel turn and the feud with his dad obviously, you know, cemented in my mind that, okay, yes, he understands character work. He understands how to play to crowds. He understands how to be in the right place at the right time for big spots in the ring. You know, there were some concerns, obviously, you know, as when he initially made that transition to being a heel in Judgment Day as to whether or not he was going to be able to hang, you know, with the talents there when it came to his ring and mic work. But I think they did a nice job of, you know, protecting him early on. And I think he has made significant strides, whether it's, you know, just all the work that he had to do on television or, you know, being present on the house show tours and that kind of stuff. But he's at the point now where he feels like they're, you know, he's closing the gaps in his game that a lot of people were able to point to as being obvious detractors for him, you know, 18 months ago or whatever the case may be. And so I think in another 2 to 3 years, you know, especially, you know, if he's in the gym working on, you know, improving his physique and adding a little bit of muscle mass and things like that, he could absolutely be somebody who's near the top of the card in WWE. I think he has that kind of upside.
Yeah, it's really fun when we can just be surprised at the ascent of someone. And I mean, one of the things I like about one of the things I appreciate the most and enjoy the most in wrestling is the journey that wrestlers are on when they are on an upward trajectory. You know, they're not just treading water or they're not anointed, but when someone just sort of earns their way onto the radar and earns more TV time when it wasn't preordained for them. And, you know, Dominic and LA Knight are a couple examples of that. TJ commented, is it really passing the torch when the person receiving the torch is 40 years old? LA Knight has fewer wrestling years ahead of him than he does behind him. Yeah, I think you can pass the torch to someone older than you. I mean, if the idea is John Cena's put in his time on top and he's you know, beat up, and I mean, he's obviously seen is older than LA Knight by quite a few years, but it is a passing the torch moment or a, you know, I mean, that's sort of a, you can be kind of hung up on the words, but it's a, you know, official giving the rub to moment, the way that Cena said, hey, I'm not a title contender, but here's somebody who's caught my eye and I think has earned some, a title match against you, Roman. Having Cena stand in the middle of the ring and endorse him is a big deal. I remember when, you know, Well, I don't know. I mean, there's all kinds of examples of that over the years. So, Jake, just your thoughts on that comment from TJ.
I apologize. Wait, I think I had an audio issue there. Can you restate the question for me?
Sure, yeah. He just said that, is it really passing the torch? Can Cena pass the torch to someone who's 40 years old and has more years behind him than ahead of him?
I think it doesn't hurt to try. You know, I don't know what the future holds for LA Knight, and I'm sure John Cena doesn't know. But WWE is in a position where they need credible challengers to Roman Reigns to get them between now and, you know, the more long-term stories that they're telling with him and Cody and, you know, potentially The Rock and others. And so, you know, is Cena in a position to, you know, to hand off the torch, so to speak? I don't know if that's necessarily what it is, other than just offering an endorsement. You know, he's yeah. been in the ring with this guy. He's been, you know, he's been doing promos in the ring with him. He sees what he has to offer. He's impressed with him. He said as much at the press conference. I think it's Cena giving LA Knight the nod of approval, you know, and whether you call that torch passing or not, I don't know if it necessarily is relevant to the discussion.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Jake, we will wrap up there. Thank you everybody for your support, listening to our show, spread the word. Jake, thank you for your time tonight, and we'll talk to you soon.